ASAP, any score, any place. We'll pull up on your boat, gang, or don't bang.
Bro, who's making this shit? No, who did this?
Let's go! Come on!
I'm so tired from watching.
90-yard touchdown! 90-yard touchdown!
That's what I do.
Hey, put your big boy boots on. We're going to get straight.
What is up, man? Welcome into the Locked On Chargers podcast. Today's episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need. I'm Daniel Wade. I am joined by my co-host, David Drogmeyer, and we are two writers who got our start at San Diego Sports Domination, San Diego's top sports blog, who have been covering the Chargers for over five seasons now, doing our own Facebook Live show, Chargers Domination Live, which airs weekly during the season. And now this is our third season as the host of the Locked On Chargers podcast, bringing you your team every day. What is up, guys, and welcome back to the Locked On Chargers podcast. Today we are going to continue with the Ultimate Division crossover, but the good news about today is it's focusing on the Chargers. So we're going to be talking about the Chargers offseason, the draft pick of Justin Herbert, life after Phillip Rivers and the next guy in that succession, what the expectations are around this team, and much more. But we're going to start with the news that Madden ratings have been linked, and we have the top 10 players for every team and the Chargers as well. So we're going to get into that, as well as the Chargers refund policy for their season ticket holders. It seems like they did the right thing on this one. So good for them. But David, let's go ahead and get into it. On Wednesday, we found out what the Los Angeles Chargers refund policy is going to be for their season ticket holders. And we also got to see the top 10 players of every team on Madden. This is Daniel Wade, joined by David Drogmeyer with your Locked On Chargers lead story. This week, the Los Angeles Chargers have sent emails and messages to all of their season ticket holders talking about what is going to happen with the uncertainty of the year due to the COVID-19 pandemic. And I think they did it right. I think they did basically all that you can ask for. When you don't know whether you're going to have games or not, you're going to be judged on how you handle that, because every NFL team is losing money right now, and the Chargers are as well. So this was a chance for the Chargers to do things the right way and really support the season ticket holders that spent so much money for this season only to not know if they'd even be able to watch a single game. And from what they have sent out, it seems like they did it the right way.
Yeah, I definitely agree. A lot of these guys, a lot of these season ticket holders are also guys that purchased personal seat licenses in the new stadium that helped the Chargers fund that incredible work of art that they're going to be playing in from this season on with the Los Angeles Rams. But their charge forward refund policy is as follows. The Chargers are allowing their season ticket holders to put their balance or put their season tickets forward to 2021, or they can give them a full refund. Also, the Chargers are going to do a 2021 ticket price freeze. They are going to also have a 2020 single game member presale, and they're going to have an exclusive charge forward member event. So I think this just shows that the Chargers know the situation is fluid and they're giving people a lot of different options. Also, extra time to pay for packages is very thoughtful and considerate.
I think so as well. And I think a lot of teams have come out and said, hey, you can push it forward to the next season. But some people might not want to do that. It's not a one-size-fits-all type of deal. You have to give people the opportunity to get their money back if they're not going to be able to go to these games. And that's exactly what the Chargers are doing. But not only that, they're going to throw a party. They're going to freeze season ticket prices for 2021 so they can get in while those prices are still relatively low and don't have to worry about that being jacked up. And if they get their money back from this season or get a credit and they are allowed to have fans this year, those season ticket members are going to have the first priority on being able to go to those games, which I think is the only thing to do. And they can use some of the money they already put in for their season tickets to buy tickets for individual games. So I think the Chargers hit a home run here. And I think with the bad publicity that they've had in the past, they really needed to hit this one out of the park. And I think they did that. But another thing that we found out this week was a leaked Madden ratings. This is from Forbes.com, who has a list of all of the different teams and their top 10 players as far as overall grade in EA Madden 21. And the Chargers actually had a pretty ridiculously loaded roster on this. They had all 10 of the players listed graded as a 85 or above. There were only two teams in the NFL that had 10 players who had at least an 85 grade, the Ravens and the New Orleans Saints. So that's pretty good company to keep. And I think what this shows, David, is that at the top of their roster, the Chargers' top-end talent can match up with anybody.
And it's fairly even as well. You look at the guys that are on this list at 85 or above, there's 6 defensive players and 4 offensive players. And they're also second in the division with 3 guys that are over 90, second only to the Chiefs, who had 6. Although they are the only team in the NFL, according to Madden, with 5 defenders at 88 or higher. Just let that sink in. That just shows that Madden really appreciates what the Chargers did to assemble the type of defense that they have. It also came out with another leak saying that the Chargers have the highest graded defense in Madden with an 85 overall. 2 guys, Chris Harris Jr. and Derwin James, also could get adjusted to 90 plus very early on in the season. Remember, these ratings can and will be adjusted throughout the year as well. So the Chargers are well represented, but that could easily increase very, very quickly throughout the year.
Right. The 3 guys they already have in the 90s are Keenan Allen, Joey Bosa, and Casey Hayward. Harris Jr. and James could definitely easily get there. And they round out the list with Melvin Ingram, Brian Bulaga, Desmond King, Hunter Henry, and Austin Eckler. And I think, you know, a guy like Desmond King's grade could go down if he's not starting immediately or able to be on the field. And I think this is just funny because these players care about what these Madden ratings are. You look at the Chargers' Twitter, they have a whole video about how Austin Eckler has a 70 in the strength department and just how basically everyone on the Chargers thinks that Austin Eckler is probably the strongest guy they have on this team. So they're not always going to be able to get all of these statistics exactly accurate, and you don't really expect them to, but you can expect if you don't get the ratings right, you're going to have these players in your mentions. But we do have 2 more segments to get into because it's the ultimate division crossover. And today we are focusing on the Chargers in the Justin Herbert era and what their 2020 expectations are coming up right after this. But first, I need to tell you guys that this episode is brought to you by rockauto.com. And we've all had issues with our cars at some point or another, but there's nothing more frustrating than going to a traditional chain storefront and having them not have the part you need. And even when they do have it, you don't know if a mechanic or somebody who knew what they were talking about might be getting a better price. You're never going to have those issues at rockauto.com, and they have everything you could ever need. I mean, they have control modules, brake parts, tail lamps, motor oil, even new carpet if you need it. Whether it's for your classic or daily driver, get everything you need in just a few easy clicks. All you guys got to do is go to rockauto.com now, and you can see all the parts available for your car or truck and write "locked on" in their "how did you hear about us" box so they know we sent you. Amazing selection, reliably low prices, all the parts your car will ever need, rockauto.com. What's up and welcome back to the Ultimate Division Crossover. I'm the host, Daniel Wade of Locked On Chargers. I'm also here with Ryan Tracy from Locked On Chiefs, Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos, and your boy Q from Locked On Raiders. All names that you're familiar with, but another week where we all get together, really just get updated on how we think this season's going to play out now that we've seen everything that's happened so far in the 2020 offseason. So as the 4th place team yesterday, it was the Raiders. Now it falls to me with the Chargers to defend myself, to defend the Chargers, and talk about, you know, all of the changes, because I think the Chargers had one of the biggest turnovers, right, at least as far as impact players of any of the teams in this division. They lost their, you know, 15-year starting quarterback. So it's time to talk about how this team is going to keep up and contend in the AFC West.
That's exactly where I want to start, too, and it looks like they put some – capital into helping out who's going to be calling signals in Los Angeles. But tell me, how do you foresee, was Herbert a surprise for you, and how do you foresee this working out?
Unfortunately, Herbert was kind of who I thought they were going to end up with the whole time. I just didn't think they would have the oomph to go up and get Tua. I mean, I think that, you know, that's what I wanted secretly, not secretly, very publicly, but that's who I wanted, especially when the Chargers, I mean, the Dolphins didn't make the trade with the Lions at 3. When I knew who the Giants wanted, I knew they were taking an offensive lineman. It's like, that's the easiest sell job in the world. The guy you want's still going to be there because Miami's going to take a quarterback. It shouldn't take much, but, you know, they said they would have taken any of the quarterbacks, which seems, I mean, easy to say in hindsight, but I was not surprised by Justin Herbert. But to go along with the theme you're talking about, I think the most impressive thing for me was just what they did after the Herbert signing, right? And just the ways they went about trying to fill out the rest of the team. They got their right tackle in free agency. They got their right guard in free agency. They lost their left tackle. But
when they picked Herbert, you just got confidence because it didn't seem like they're not going to try to make Justin Herbert into Phillip Rivers, which was one of my main concerns. Don't try to treat them as if they're the same type of player, because I think with Justin Herbert's limitations, it has to be a different offense. So you see them go out and get KJ Hill. You see them go out and get Joe Reed, a kind of a gadget player, kind of like Lynn Bowden is for the Raiders, another guy that you're not a complete receiver, but they're trying to get somebody they can get the ball off too quick and let them do the rest of the work, which I think works out for Tyrod Taylor and Justin Herbert. But I think, you know, making contributions on the offensive line and getting weapons that should actually be able to accentuate what your new quarterbacks do well, I think that was definitely a positive.
You know, Daniel, you talked about Justin Herbert, the addition of a new quarterback there. Look, I'm a big Herbert guy. I've watched a lot of Herbert. I think it's just a matter of time before, you know, once he does take over, I think you will see some of these things. There are obviously areas of his game he's got to sharpen up, but his ball placement, his ability to throw on the run, I tell you, is very exciting to watch as an analyst. And I think that the Chargers, whenever he does step into that role, I think they're going to get a hell of a football player. So I know it wasn't the sexiest pick overall in comparison to who was available at the time. I do believe, though, that it can potentially be a big-time move for the franchise. But, you know, instead of talking about the offensive side of the ball in terms of the additions of Justin Herbert, I want to talk about an in-division kind of change there. Former Denver Bronco Chris Harris Jr., he's now coming over to play inside the slot in that tough defense. Look, where you factor in Melvin Ingram, Joey Bosa, Derwin James, and then also Desmond King and Casey Hayward. I mean, this seems like a very loaded defense. They bring in Chris Harris Jr., and they also add Kenneth Murray via the NFL draft. To me, you know, in your opinion, where do the Chargers sit defensively, and do you feel like they've added enough firepower to maybe keep up with the Kansas City Chiefs here in the AFC West?
It's hard to say keep up with the Chiefs just because, I mean, we saw what they did in such a short amount of time to one of the best defenses in the NFL last year with the 49ers, who had a great pass rush, who had a great secondary. So it's hard to say whether it's enough to keep up, but I think that's definitely this team's calling card now, right? And I think that's the shift offensively. This was Phillip Rivers' team for the last 16 seasons, and now this is going to be a defensive-oriented team, in my opinion, because they are pretty loaded on that side. There's some obvious big question marks for me. I think the two biggest question marks, in my opinion, are what are you going to get from Jerry Tillery going into year two? Because we know how important that interior pass rush is, especially against guys like Patrick Mahomes or Tom Brady. Even a couple of seasons ago, they made that playoff run, and guess what? They got bullied by the Patriots, and you have video clips of Joey Bosa running by Tom Brady, telling him to hold on to it a little bit longer, right? And that's the biggest thing, because Joey Bosa and Melvin Ingram were both top, I think, six in the NFL last year in pass rush win rate. They were winning, and they still ended up being 28th in the league in sacks. So that definitely has to change. But you get Chris Harris Jr., who's going to solidify the slot. They say he's going to play in the slot, which I think is encouraging because that's where his best years came in Denver. I mean, he is the best in the slot. His defensive backs coach, Ron Miles, who used to be the defensive backs coach with Champ Bailey and Chris Harris Jr. with the Broncos back in the day, always told him that was the spot for him. So being able to have that connection with him is, I think, a big reason why he came over. But when you look at what this team is returning, Derwin James coming back hopefully for a full healthy season, adding Linval Joseph, and we talked with your boy Q yesterday about physicality and meanness and all those things. The Chargers brought that in on defense with Linval Joseph, with Chris Harris Jr. They brought in not only excellent players, but they brought in an attitude. That's what I love about Chris Harris Jr., because it's like, hey, you have Desmond King, who was 2018 All-Pro in the slot, and you're bringing in his replacement and with him going into a contract year. But at the same time, you have so many players now. I mean, that's just another defensive weapon that can be deployed somewhere else. But the opposite cornerback spot, opposite Casey Hayward Jr., that Michael Davis, they brought back Michael Davis. That's the biggest question mark for me. I think he's played okay, but that's the obvious target now. Are you going to target Chris Harris Jr. in the slot? Are you going to target Casey Hayward Jr.? Are you going to target Michael Davis, right? I mean, I think that's an obvious place to go. They have a lot of range in the back end with Derwin James and Rayshon Jenkins, who I think could get replaced actually this year. They're already talking about moving him up to play some more dime linebacker, nickel linebacker play. So I'm hoping Nazir Adderley takes the field. But going into this season, I think one of the biggest differences is this is going to be a defense-oriented team, and they know they have to be dominant on the defensive side of the ball to make up for what could be limitations with Tyrod Taylor trying to adjust to this offense.
And I know that this is not something new. I'm not breaking any news on the show today, but I mean, it's life after Phillip Rivers. There's Charger fans that, you know, that's the only quarterback they've ever seen. You know, I mean, he was with the organization long enough to, you know, raise some Charger fans. So, you know, one, how is it now with, you know, life after Phillip Rivers, and since him and Tyrod Taylor are such different style of quarterbacks, how does the Chargers offense develop with Tyrod Taylor there?
Well, I think that's a huge question, especially given everything that's going on, trying to implement a new offense surrounded by players who have totally different skill sets. I mean, Tyrod Taylor is not going to huck 50-50 balls to Mike Williams all day, which leads to good and bad things, obviously, for the Chargers. But I think it goes back to what I talked about before, and also the fact that this is Shane Steichen's first year as the offense coordinator. He took over halfway through the season last year for Ken Wisenhunt. He was still going with the Ken Wisenhunt playbook for the most part. So this is his chance to fully implement his offense. And the one thing we've heard a lot from them so far is a lot more play action. They're going to be running a lot more pistol formation, getting their talented running back core on the field and being able to do more gadget type things, run a lot more motion. And I think when you look at Anthony Lynn, one thing that a lot of people forget about is he actually kind of comes from the Mike Shanahan coaching tree. That was one of his first coaching gigs. So I think with this Chargers team, not only do they want to be a more run-heavy team, they're not going to air it out with Phillip Rivers and put everything on Tyrod Taylor or Justin Herbert's back, hopefully. But I think that's what you're going to be seeing a lot more of. You're going to be seeing a lot more movement. You're going to be seeing a lot more play action. You're going to see more of an outside zone running scheme. And when you have guys like Justin Jackson, who before injuries was averaging like 9 yards per carry, leading the NFL last year before he got injured, and Austin Ekeler, those guys' skill sets, Austin Ekeler is not meant to run in between the tackles. He can do it okay, but these guys' skill set is meant for them to get out on the edge, find a gap, and burst through it and produce chunk plays. And I think for the Chargers, finding those chunk plays, the explosive plays outside of, you know, after Phillip Rivers is going to be a huge question.
Now, as we look at how things have changed since our last conversation, we covered a number of things. One thing stands out to me to feed into what you were talking about earlier about the offense. It seems to me if you have a rookie quarterback, whether it's this season or next season, you're going to try to transition. I would have thought that maybe some focus on offensive weapons that can play between the hashes might have been on the table. Instead, they went and traded up and took one of my sweethearts of the draft in Ken Murray to add to an already loaded defense. A, what do you think Murray's role will be in his rookie season? And are you down with that decision, or should they have stayed on the offensive side with those two picks?
I mean, it's really hard to justify moving up for an off-ball linebacker, just generally speaking. I mean, you talked about it earlier on Monday's show with Clyde Edwards-Helaire, just taking a running back in the first round. There's just a certain feel to it that you don't like. But as far as what he brings to the table, I mean, they've kind of, you know, downplayed what they think they expect from him this season. I think he's number one guy right away. I mean, I think he steps onto the field as a starter his rookie season and brings something to that second level of that defense, that middle area that they just didn't have, which is speed, which obviously in the AFC West you need. He's the fastest linebacker by far. He's the guy that brings the most explosiveness on the defense by far already, you know, just stepping in at that level with that linebacking group. You pair him with Drew Tranquil, I think it's a really good match for them. And I think Kenneth Murray is going to be tasked with a lot his rookie season. And we've seen other guys, whether it's Devin Bush, Devin White, Rashawn Evans, we've seen guys struggle to kind of early on get in and be dominant linebackers right away. And I'm not necessarily expecting that. But as far as the role he's going to play, I think it's going to be a big one. I thought they would attack the offensive line with that second pick. I think there were still some guys, even when they traded up, I thought, hey, maybe they're trying to target Ezra Cleveland or someone like that to try to solidify that left tackle position. The Chargers have been very bullish on Trey Pipkins, and we'll get into, you know, the things they didn't address later on. But I wasn't stoked about the move to trade up for him, but I am stoked about the player. I mean, he's just an exciting player. He's the kind of player you want on your football team, a guy who's going to run and hit. And even though we didn't see him do a lot of coverage at Oklahoma, I think you saw some natural instincts for the drops, for the short zone coverage that Gus Bradley is going to run with these linebackers. And if you're talking about man-to-man running backs in the flats, covering some tight ends, I mean, the amount of running backs I saw him chase down in the flat for a tackle for loss, that's so exciting as a Charger fan who had James White, you know, carve them up with like 15 receptions in that playoff game that I already talked about. So I love the pick. Moving up for the pick, I was, you know, I don't love that part of it.
Certainly when you have to give up some capital to be able to get something, I always get that. The opportunity cost, you just hope that the investment can pay off. Number 25 left the Broncos to go to the Chargers, and number 25 left the Chargers to go to the Broncos. So you know, a little bit of thoughts too. You know, obviously with Melvin Gordon, we know that he held out a little bit through the first part of last season, and that's where we really saw Austin Eckler just rise even further, right? And I think that the storyline that I want to ask you in terms of how it fits to the Chargers, because I think really the running attack is going to be very big for their offense this year to kind of counteract the loss of Phillip Rivers and just the nuance of Tyrod Taylor learning it. Outside of Austin Eckler, we know he's the guy that could do it all, the all-purpose type guy. Who is the one running back that you envision to be that premier run in between the tackles, probably have a little bit more carries overall in between the tackles to withstand a little bit of physicality? That's something that Melvin Gordon was able to do last year while Eckler was the guy to be on the receiving end of the jet motions, the dump outs to the flats, and even the wheel routes, or to be able to line up in the slot. Who's going to be the guy that takes that pressure off of Austin?
I think it has to be Josh Kelly, the fourth round pick. I mean, if you're looking at just the physical stature of these players plus the durability, I mean, Justin Jackson hasn't been able to get through a full season healthy. So it's hard to imagine him being the guy that's going to, you know, be that durable guy, be the between the tackles guy. I think it has to be Josh Kelly. I mean, I do think this will be a full running back by committee situation. I think you'll see Austin Eckler still go out to the slot at times. I think you'll see multi-running back sets with the Chargers getting these guys on the field just because there's so much talent in that room. But I think they brought in Josh Kelly with a very specific vision. I think that's probably why they reached for him a little bit. I mean, I think there was still some value later on in the draft at running back that they could have still tried to find that same type of role for someone. But as far as Melvin Gordon is concerned, I mean, he was pretty well-rounded. I mean, he could catch the ball. He could run the ball. I don't think he really excelled at any one thing, but they don't really have that guy that can be the in-between the tackles guy plus catching the ball out of the backfield, even though Josh Kelly can do that a little bit. But I think short yardage situation, goal line situations, which is somewhere they really struggled last year, even when Melvin Gordon came back. I mean, the fumble against the Tennessee Titans on the 1 yard line. I mean, it was almost comical the way that game ended, like so many other Chargers games end up, you know, being decided by crazy situations like that. But if you're talking about who is going to be the in-between the tackles guy, who is going to be the physical guy that's going to let, you know, Austin Eckler and Justin Jackson, more finesse players, stay on the field, I think they're going to be tasking Josh Kelly as a rookie with that pretty early on.
Daniel, one thing that is always on my mind is how the expectations for the Chargers are always so high, and then something seems to get in the way. You know what I mean? It just every year it's like, yes, okay, the year it's going to be the Chargers. They're going to make a run. Watch out for them. Something always seems to get in the way, and usually it leads with injury. So let me go there. Let's go to injury and guys coming back, and Hunter Henry is the dude. We all know Hunter Henry is going to be the guy, the tight end position. He's on the franchise tag. He's happy to be on the franchise tag for now. How big of a role do you expect him to have, especially with Tyrod Taylor? A tight end is basically a quarterback's best friend, you know, in any offense. So how big of a role do you expect him to be, or how much of an expanded role, really, is he going to have this upcoming year?
Well, I mean, they're going to have to hope he plays very well because he's really their only option. I mean, they took a couple of flyers. They took Donald Parham from the XFL. They have Virgil Green, who Cody could tell you is not the receiving threat of the group. So he is really not only the guy, but kind of the only guy right there at that position. And I think the biggest thing is going to be, can Tyrod Taylor cure some of the things that have hurt him in the past as far as throwing over the middle of the field? Because Tyrod Taylor played well for Buffalo during that 3-year season. I mean, I don't think he gets enough credit for ending that Buffalo Bills drought. I mean, they sat him for Nathan Peterman for one game, and Peterman threw 5 interceptions against the Chargers in that game, and Tyrod Taylor came in the second half. But I think that's going to be the biggest thing, because when we've looked in games in the past with Phillip Rivers and stuff like that, one of the main points of games the Chargers lost was how involved did they get Hunter Henry? You know, when you see him going 2 for 22 and you see the offense bogged down the way it has been in some of the games I'm talking about, you realize how important he is for that offense, how important he is to occupy the guys in the middle of the field so that you can get Austin Eckler out of the backfield, so that you can get some of these gadget players the ball quickly and have other people focus attention on somebody else, you know, that. And so I think for them, Tyrod Taylor hasn't, you know, historically been able to throw to the middle of the field. But with the new offense, I see the Chargers running with a lot more play action, maybe even mixing in some RPOs, which is like a foreign language with Phillip Rivers at quarterback. I think that he's going to be uber important. And I think as far as the offense goes, one of the ways that they're going to try to be able to continue to pick up first downs, because they're not going to have those explosive plays, is having him available on those short routes. He's one of the most dependable receiving tight ends in the league as far as hands. I think he didn't drop a pass his senior year at Arkansas. I mean, he is that dependable guy. It'll just be, can Tyrod Taylor have the confidence to find him over the middle enough up the seam enough for him to stay a constant and present danger for opposing defenses. Because if he can't make those throws, then it's not much more than a decoy, and they have to keep him very integrated into this offense.
And as we approach the wrap-up of the Chargers episode, one guy stands out to me. And we saw the success Terry McLaurin has had in the league, and a guy that played a similar role at Ohio State is somebody I had my eye on, particularly after the Senior Bowl. KJ Hill is a guy that, like you talked in the last segment, has the ability to play in the short game, over the middle. Is he somebody that can help Tyrod and eventually Herbert, or is there another guy? Who's the biggest sleeper that we should be paying attention to?
So I think as far as the draft class goes, I think he could be a sleeper, even though I think, I mean, when you get somebody like that in the seventh round that nobody expects to be there in the seventh round, everyone's going to just point at that and be like, look what the Chargers did. I mean, they got this guy in the seventh round. But the funny thing is, I think he actually has the better chance of the two receivers that they drafted to actually take over that wide receiver three spot. And obviously, you know, he fits better in the slot. So maybe that turns into Keenan Allen playing more on the outside and him playing in the slot a little bit more. But even though KJ Hill isn't a deep threat, he performed well on deep balls. I mean, that was definitely part of his game at Ohio State. I mean, he didn't drop a deep pass over the last season. So, I mean, he definitely brings that part to his game. And I think there's just always going to be room for guys that just get open. And when you look at the finesse of his route running, if you look at the fact that he was able to overcome in that division going up against uber athletic players in the Big Ten and still being able to be as dominant as he was, I think the speed, the 40-yard dash time is what really scared people away from him. But he is just such a solid player. And with Keenan Allen, this being the last year of his contract and no imminent contract extension on the horizon, I'm not saying at all that KJ Hill can be that player, but I think you see the Chargers planning for the future a little bit. I think they see him as a part of this offense. And I think as far as rookies go, he's one of the guys that could be a surprise impact player, especially as a seventh round pick, which, I mean, in normal situations, isn't even a guy who's a lock to make the roster. But the one guy I am looking for flipping to the other side of the ball this year is Nazir Adderley, right? I mean, a guy that many people thought was going to be a first-round pick in the draft that they ended up taking Jerry Tillery. Some people had Nazir Adderley actually slotted for that pick. He ends up going in the second round with the 60th overall pick. And the only time we've actually seen him on the field was one preseason game. Yet that one preseason game was a glimpse into how exciting this guy could be. I mean, he almost had three interceptions in that game. I was just a guy that's, he's a magnet to the football. And the better thing for me is he's more reliable on the back end than Rayshon Jenkins is. How many times did we see last year? I can point out a play in each one of the games against this division where Rayshon Jenkins missed a big tackle. For the Broncos, it was Cortland Sutton. For the Chiefs, it was Damian Williams, 85-yard rushing touchdown. I mean, you can look back last season and just single out all of the plays that he ended up being a big negative factor on. If you have Nazir Adderley, not only do I think he would contend, I mean, for the league, not the league, but the team league in lead in interceptions, but he's an exciting presence on the back end that they just don't have right now. He was injured in 2019, but 2020, if he's able to get on the field, I promise he's going to do big things.
We just spoke of the secondary there. I want to ask you a little bit more about the offensive line, because over the last several years, offensive line, just like Denver, has always been a big question mark for the Chargers. In your opinion, do you feel like the moves that the Chargers made this offseason maybe help renovate that offensive line a little bit? Do you think it's going to be an improvement? Or, you know, when you look at Tyrod Taylor, a player who is absolutely athletic, can be a guy that can extend plays out of the pocket with his legs, keep things alive, and almost kind of make up for some of those deficiencies. Where are you at in terms of the offensive line for the Los Angeles Chargers? I almost called him San Diego, which, you know, which still I think is an adjustment period for everybody. But the offensive line, what is your overview on them, and did they get better or did they get worse?
I think talent-wise, they absolutely got better. I mean, they lose Russell Okung, which, I mean, sucks, because even though he missed a lot of last season, I don't think people really understand how much better they were in 2018 because they had him on that left side. And obviously that plays into, you know, Phillip Rivers being a statue. And if anyone gets by either of the tackles, he's done for. And that's obviously a little bit different. And I think you see the Chargers move around a lot. You see them get out on the edge. You see them sliding some protections to try to make up for the deficiencies that they have there. But there's one big thing that is the giant elephant in the room, and that's the left tackle position, arguably the most important position on the offensive line. There's no left-handed quarterbacks on the Chargers roster right now. So Brian Bulaga, obviously having that, he's the best offensive right tackle that they've had in 10-plus years. I mean, easily. It's not even a question. It's been that bad at the right tackle position for them. But Trey Pipkins on the left side, having as much confidence as they do to not address it in the draft, to not address it in free agency. I mean, there's a guy that, as we're talking about this, Jason Peters, that's out there right now, that just seems to make so much sense for this team, who could give a third round pick out of a Division III school in Sioux Falls an extra year to be seasoned. He got a limited time last year, allowed 4 sacks in the time he was out there. You saw some flashes, but in offensive, for offensive linemen, flashes aren't going to do it, right? You have to be able to play a complete game, because one little mistake can lead to game-changing action. So I think that's the biggest thing for them, to have that much faith in the left tackle position, for them to really be trotting out the same left guards that they did last season, and neither one of them really played exceptionally. So I think there's still some very big questions. Overall, they improved in talent. They brought in James Campen, who was a big reason why they were able to sign Brian Bulaga. I mean, they had that connection from their time in the Green Bay Packers, but the Chargers are relying a lot on, hey, let's bring in a little bit of lesser talent, at least with some of our own homegrown guys, and let them develop. And they just haven't been able to do that. So can James Campen do that? He's had a history of making mid-round picks into Pro Bowlers. I'm not sure yet, but it's still a huge question mark in my mind. As much as you want to motion, as much as you want to move around, that's still a really, really big question mark. And right now, the rest of the roster is pretty deep and pretty loaded, but when you have a position like left tackle that's so important with such a giant question mark, it's really hard to feel great about it.
You know, I got to ask this question, and I say it with all due respect. I'm not trying to –
It never starts well when it starts like that.
Yeah, exactly. I hate to you know, line something up like that, because it always sounds really terrible and really bad. But this is, I mean, a real deal question, because I've seen some players come out and say some stuff about that. We always joke that when the Chargers have a home game, it's still a road game. How does that affect the team, though? I mean, in all honesty, you know, like, we're talking about new stadiums in Vegas. Well, the Chargers are moving into a new stadium that they share with the Rams, but it seems like it's always a road game, because the fan base just isn't there. How does that affect the players? And I've even heard Philip Rivers talk about how it wasn't ideal and he wasn't too thrilled with this. So just from what you've been able to pick up from the players, what, you know, what is their mindset when they realize every single one of their games basically is a away game?
Well, it's funny, because I think Melvin Gordon, who's now on the Broncos, is actually, you know, kind of voiced his opinion on that, and then subsequently just got absolutely roasted on social media by fans who are, you know, being a little bit not self-aware enough to realize that even though what he's saying you don't like, you still have to kind of realize that it's a true thing. And I think when you're talking about something like this, you're not going to get the blatant statement from a key player just saying like, hey, it sucks, we don't have any fans at the stadium. If Philip Rivers is doing, you know, silent counts on his home field, I mean, it doesn't get much worse than that. And I think it definitely affects them more than they would let on. I mean, a couple of seasons ago, they only lost one road game outside of Los Angeles. So they were adopting a mantra of ASAP, any squad, any place. But that's kind of what you have to do when you don't have a home field advantage, right? You have to be much better on the road. And I think we saw comments from Philip Rivers saying how much he liked playing on the road and how much he liked going out there, because at least it was, you know, passionate fans that he could kind of get riled up from, right? I mean, it doesn't take much for Philip Rivers to get riled up, but they actually ended up playing better on the road in some of those seasons because it was just a better atmosphere. Now, you go to a 70,000 or 80,000 seat stadium, and to expect that off of a, you know, terrible 5-11 season like the Chargers just had to get better. I mean, we saw after the 12-4 playoff run team that it didn't get better, right? So I think for the Chargers struggling to find a foothold in Los Angeles, trying to be excited about a new stadium that, you know, is going to be filled up with other teams' fans, is definitely going to affect these players. And they can say, you know, that it does then. They can come up with all of these things, but it's almost impossible to think that it has anything other than a negative impact on the team when you just have opposing teams fans in your stadium. So I think the more interesting point is, what is that going to look like? Because you were able to fill a 27,000 seat stadium with other teams fans. Are you going to be able to fill a 80,000 seat stadium with other teams fans? The other part of this that kind of goes into it is the Chargers had the highest priced tickets out of the entire NFL last year. And it wasn't even close. Right? I mean, the Patriots were the second highest priced ticketed team, and theirs was $40 less on average than what the Chargers was. So obviously now it's a much more affordable price range. You can go to the games easier, and there's more incentive to go to them because anyone can watch the game from their couch and get pretty good quality of what they're seeing, right? You have a better view of everything than you would at the actual game itself. But I think it's a huge concern going into this season. And it's something that the NFL has to be pretty scared about, seeing what that's going to look like. And how did that translate into the Chargers' schedule? They don't have any primetime games at home, right? The only primetime games they have are on the road. You look at the Raiders going into a new stadium. They have a bunch of primetime home games. And I think you can just see from a sentiment in the league that they're scared of what's going to happen when these things open up. I mean, so many people have made, you know, jokes about, hey, with no spectators being allowed, that, you know, it's kind of putting everyone else on the Chargers level as far as not having a fan base. And that's actually probably truer than most Chargers fans would like to admit. But it's a really, really scary thought to think about what that's going to look like and see what percentage of fans there are actually going to be Chargers fans and how much of that giant, brand new, super nice stadium they're going to be able to fill up. Because if they're going based on performance, they're not going to be able to bring any more fans in based on the season that we just saw. Right now, the only thing they can sell is hope. We have a great defense. We have a young new quarterback, a new face of the franchise who somehow went in a time machine and predicted he'd be playing for the Chargers in Los Angeles in a letter that was written from him when he was like 10 years old. That's a story for another time. But I think the fear is real, and I think that it's a legitimate concern for the Chargers on who is going to show up once they finally open up those gates. But that is going to wrap things up for the Ultimate Division Crossover. This has been a super fun week with Ryan Tracy. You can follow on Twitter at Ryan Tracy NFL. Same with Cody Rourke of Locked On Broncos at Cody Rourke NFL, and your boy Q from the Locked On Raiders at your boy Q254 on Twitter as well. What a fun week. You can follow any of our shows on Spotify or subscribe to us on Apple Podcasts to get all of the new shows sent straight to your phone. That's always the best way to do it. Make sure to give us a follow. Make sure, if you haven't already, to check out the rest of this week, because it was a really fun week of Ultimate Division Crossovers. And I think we're going to see one of the most competitive divisions in the NFL. And I think you heard why this week. But tomorrow will be the wild card edition, where you get you guys caught up with everything else that's happened while we've been involved in our bubble talking about the AFC West. So make sure to check back in for that. But we'll talk to you guys later.